8 o'clock on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's 3 o'clock. And time now for World Roots with Lucy Duran.
Hello. Today we're going to be reviewing new releases from Papua New Guinea, Hungary, Mali and Cambodia via Los Angeles. My guests David Hutchin and Jane Cornwell will be joining me shortly to discuss those. But first, we have a bass player, percussionist and guitarist lined up in the studio, accompanying a singer I first heard at the WOMAD Festival 4 years ago. Her stunning voice blew me away that rainy afternoon in the little mobile radio studio. So I'm very pleased to welcome back to Radio 3, Mor Karbasi. Mor Karbasi and her band with the traditional Sephardic song Desile al mi amor, Tell My Love. And we'll be hearing more from them in the studio later on. And I'll also be talking with Mor about her new album and her diverse musical influences. First, writers David Hutchin and Jane Cornwell have joined me round the table to consider some of the current world music CD releases. So hello to you both. And Jane, you were last here in March What have you been up to since then?
Well, I've been to Paris a couple of times. Last time I interviewed Camille, who's the singer-songwriter and, I guess, performance artist, about her new album, which is coming out in September. And I was at the Hay Festival talking to Marina Abad from Ojos de Brujo for Songlines. And I've been doing a bit of kickboxing and salsa dancing.
How about you, David? What have you been up to? In fact, last time you were on the programme, you were just off to Mali to do something about the new Afro-Cubism project.
I was. You turfed me out of here and I had to run to catch my plane. Just made it. Once I got to Bamako, of course, in the way of the curse of the Buena Vista Social Club, things just started going wrong. I was going to interview Jelly Madi Tunkara, the guitarist, who's going to be playing a concert, but he fell on his way to the bathroom, broke his leg, and I had to interview him while he was sitting in his bed in the pitch black with his leg in plaster.
Let's stay in Mali for the moment. Jane, you have an album from a new voice.
I do, an exciting new album from a young singer, a young Malian singer called Fatoumata Diawara, who goes by the nickname Fatou. And it's a new release on World Circuit. And we're going to hear one of her songs called Willy Lay, which is about a conflict between old and new values.
Willy Lay, Willy Lay, Johnny Willy Lay.
Wilile by the young Malian artist Fatoumata Diawara. That is a track from her album Fatou, which is out in September on the World Circuit label. But there is an EP out already, which is entitled Kanu. Jane, tell us your thoughts on Fatoumata Diawara.
Well, I think it's an absolutely beautiful album, and it's helped by her backstory, which is quite remarkable in that she was a child member of her father's dance troupe and quite an arrogant girl, I think. You know, she refused to go to school at the age of 12, and so her parents shunted her off to Bamako to live with an aunt who was an actress, and from there she got into film and theatre and basically became quite successful in both those fields, but her family forced her to announce she was retiring from theatre and film, and various situations led to her running away to Paris and starting a career there, and she was overheard singing in the dressing room, and from there she started writing her songs, and you know, so it's been a sort of lovely progression, but she just looks so amazing as well. She's absolutely beautiful.
Dave?
You're right, it's an absolutely beautiful song, brilliant album, and to me, again, one of the surprising things is that it doesn't sound like a World Circuit album. It's a bit of a shock to discover that World Circuit is once again out looking for new young talent and finding it and doing such a brilliant job with this. I think the connection would be that for the last couple of years she'd been one of Umu Sangare's backing singers, dancers, and without wanting to incur the wrath of Umu. For me, on a couple of occasions, she did seem to be stealing the show.
But she's also got this incredible confidence that comes from doing film and theatre. And she did a film in Mali called Sia, which was very, very popular. And I think for a lot of Malians, she personifies this role of Sia.
I think what's fun is that World Circuit, which is, you know, the company that made its name through the Buena Vista Social Club, who were, you know, the all really old musicians, most of whom have since departed this world, you know, and now suddenly they've signed a new artist.
Well, great,
and she's 29
as well.
So she's young.
Yeah, well, I was hoping that in 20 years' time World Circuit would sign me. Now I realise I'm 20 years too late.
But I think that, you know, Fatou really has the potential to cross over to the more rock market, indie market, not just world music and African music lovers.
Well, Fatoumata Diawara is performing in London on Monday, the 18th of July, as part of the Blaze Festival. She'll be at the Rich Mix Arts Centre at Bethnal Green Road. And next month on World Roots, we'll have a session from Umu Sangare, who we've just been talking about, Fatoumata's mentor. David, you've brought something along with a Cambodian flavour to it. So another continent, or another two continents, really.
Two continents. It's Dengue Fever, whose lead singer, Chaom Namol, is Cambodian, but the rest of the band, they're from Los Angeles, where Chaom Namol now lives. And I just thought it's the time to listen to some Franco-Anglo-Khmer disco stomp in a Giorgio Moroder style. So this is Thank You, Goodbye from their new album, Cannibal Courtship.
Just another second, my past.
Thank You, Goodbye, from the new album Cannibal Courtship by Dengue Fever, which is out now on the Fantasy Concord label. Personally, I hear very little world music in that.
Ah, well, you see, Dengue Fever started off by playing Cambodian rock songs from the 1960s, 70s. And what the Cambodians did, because obviously with Cambodia being stuck right next to Vietnam, they heard American rock on the radio. And what they tried to do was adapt it for the Khmer audience by putting in their own rhythms, putting in subjects such as coining, which is where, in order to chase out the spirits, they rub your body red raw with coins, or songs about driving around Phnom Penh on a cyclo and trying to chat up women. Their first album, which was just called Dengue Fever, was cover versions of those songs. Since then, they've sort of developed a bit, started writing their own songs, but still trying to keep true to that Cambodian feel from the late 60s, early 70s, which is why that Giorgio Moroder beat, you're thinking, well, yeah, that's straight back to Donna Summer and I Feel Love and Love.
Yeah, it's definitely got that late 70s, early 80s sound to it, doesn't it? But I mean, is the singer, Chom Nimol, is she the only Cambodian in the group?
She is, yep. What happened was the keyboard player, Ethan Holtzman, he was travelling around Cambodia in about 1997, and he picked up some cassettes, brought them back to play to his brother, and he discovered his brother was already playing a bootleg album called Khmer Rock that he'd found in Los Angeles. And they then spent a couple of months trying to learn these songs, and then wondered who they could get to sing them and translate the lyrics, and found Nimol singing in a Cambodian restaurant in Los Angeles.
I mean, they have a fairly high world music profile, don't they? Because they've showcased at WOMEX and so on. But I mean, Jane,
well, for instance, that's opportunism, really. Because I mean, they're a rock band, effectively. I mean, I love them. I love parts of them, actually. I think, you know, there's a real sense of humour. You've got to just read some of the lyrics, and you know, they are, everything's, a lot of it's done in inverted commas, I think. Yeah, to me, it's not particularly world. It just happens to feature a Cambodian singer. And the backstory's kind of world, I guess. But I think the guys want to rock out a little bit too much, and sometimes that really detracts from, the beauty of her voice and maybe just more subtle kind of touches. I think you get hammered over the head with a few of those tracks.
It's not as if they're doing it with no respect for Cambodia. They are actually trying to keep true to the ideas,
yeah, I agree
of the
with
music,
that. I think they want to have a lot of fun as well, and sometimes the
But
fun
also, I guess, if
overshadows.
Cambodian musicians in the 60s and 70s were playing their versions of American rock, so, you know, Dengue Fever is doing what they were doing in the 60s and 70s. It's just that they're based in LA instead of in Cambodia.
Absolutely. I'd agree with you. And I've heard the band talking about it, being said, well, you're a rock band, do you really want to be called a world music band? And they said, well, last month we were at a festival playing with Shane Cootey. If that's world music, we want to be part of that.
So let's head further east with the next release. Jane, tell us about Telek.
OK, this is Telek, who I love, who's a Papua New Guinean artist. He's probably the foremost musician in Papua New Guinea, and has been for the last 30 years, I guess. He's just released an album called Akave on the new Wontok label. And this song is called West Papua, and it's a remix, and it's been number one all over Melanesia.
Sun, he got my, now what is that, yeah.
West Papua by the artist Telek from Papua New Guinea, and that's on his album Akave, which is out on the label Wantok Music. So as we were listening to it, David, you were saying it's got a ring of Let It Be by the Beatles and No Woman, No Cry by Bob Marley.
It is a lovely, lovely blend of those two songs, which I would imagine there's very few people listening now who have not been tapping their feet and swaying along to it.
Well, Jane, just tell us a little more about Telek, about this artist.
He was initially brought to the wider world by a producer and musician from Australia called David Bridie, who I've called in the past Australia's Peter Gabriel, but he's not having that, so that's fair enough. But he went up to PNG to record with his band Not Drowning Waving, who are an ambient indie outfit, and happened to be up there and heard a band called the Moab String Band, string band music being huge in the Pacific, which was fronted by a guy called George Telek. Went to a barbecue, happened to bump into Telek, said, "Will you come and sing on our album?" And they released an album called Tabaran, which was the first time Western musicians collaborated with Melanesian musicians. Amazing album, 1988, I think, and ended up being feted by everybody from David Byrne to Peter Gabriel. And the track we heard is, I know it's very reggae. I know it's got the sort of very
language feel. Well, you don't have to be defensive about that.
I'm a little bit defensive about it because it's been downloaded right across the Pacific because it's a freedom anthem. And West Papua has been annexed by Indonesia, and the West Papuan, or the Papuan people, effectively, have been, their culture's been quite diminished. Everything from language to music has been compromised. This track, when I saw people perform this, they had Aboriginal artists, they had Pacific Islanders, they had Polynesian artists, from New Zealand, but they all know this song and they're all standing there with fists clenched.
There is, at the risk of me sounding old, no Ollie, there is actually a really good Papua New Guinean reggae connection in that in 1979, when Bob Marley recorded his survival album, which was going to be called Black Survival. On the cover, the designer, Neville Garrick, he put some pictures of slave ships, but he also put all the flags of the independent African nations, with one exception. he stuck in the Papua New Guinea flag as well as a nod to all sorts of indigenous movements for freedom. And I think, you know, if anybody gets to play a bit of reggae without Jane having to apologise for it, then it's Telly.
But reggae is huge in the Pacific. I mean, so is rock. I mean, Telek was in a rock band.
Well, yeah, I mean, it must be said that there are a lot of other influences on this album. I mean, that's West Papua, the track we just heard, is the first track on the album. But then...
The first track, West Papua, I think that's the best thing on the album. And the last track... is that Ao Mari? My pronunciation may not be so credible, but that's an old string band song. I think those are the two tracks that stand out for me at the beginning and the end. In between, I think the band get it a little bit into a groove. It's a great groove. It's a lovely groove, but they play it again and again and again. And for me, it's just 9 of the tracks are a little bit too similar.
Well, I don't agree. I think perhaps that's maybe because your ears aren't that attuned to the music from that region, perhaps. But I think that what David Bridie, who produced this, and Tim Cole, who's co-producer, they've put just enough in to satisfy contemporary takes, enough technological stuff. But I think the songs are quite varied. There's everything from lullabies to...
But, you know, maybe this is all to do with how one listens to something. And obviously, this is an artist who... has a great kind of symbolic meaning for his people. And so presumably his audiences listen to his music in a different way.
Oh, I'd agree. It's the same with Thomas Mapfumo. You know, he's got, as far as I know, he's got one song, but it's a brilliant song, and I don't care how many times he plays it.
Well, what I also love about this is that there are one track called Wali, one track called Malira. They're love charm songs that are used in One society, which is where Telek comes from, on the island of East New Guinea province. And they say love charm songs where they're used to attract partners of the opposite sex. So they stay up all night in the bush and sing these songs. And some of them are here and they're just quite beautiful.
There are so many artists from that side of the world that we don't get to hear. That's why my ears aren't attuned properly. We need more artists from Papua New Guinea.
Absolutely,
so I can get my ears tuned.
Indeed.
Good point. David? For our fourth album, we go to you. And this is a band from Hungary, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce their name.
It's how are you supposed to buy an album when you can't even pronounce the name of it? It's Shundurgo. The track, I think, is Opa Koopa from the album Tambourizing. Ava ruža, ava ge, pa i dura mekale.
eswere çabaşa kasmaya stara demandala sa sabırca imaçe oy mancarnaşa o katıpa sedemanda çayım kaçıyordu attı bir lakoni çalı o katıpa sedemanda çayım kaçıyordu attı bir lakoni çalı lumbay 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 la haydi haydi
Opa Kupa by the group Shundurgo, and if you're wondering how it's actually written, it looks more like Sondorgo, and that's from their album Tambourizing, Lost Music of the Balkans, and the singer there was Katia Tompos. That's out on World Village. So what's interesting is, I wonder why it's called Lost Music of the Balkans. They're from Hungary.
They're from Hungary, but the music they've got together on this album is Serbian and Croatian from villages throughout Hungary. The band are four brothers, the Eredic brothers, and a friend Attila Busas on bass. Yeah, but how just even titling your album Lost Music of the Balkans, it kind of begs the question, why did it get lost? I mean, my problem, hey, this may be personal, but I just don't find it sexy enough. And for me, whenever I want to listen to music, I mean, it has to kind of serve a purpose. And one of the first purposes at home for me would be for dancing. I mean, you know, was it Dorothy Parker that said, dancing is the vertical expression of horizontal desire? And with this, you know,
I agree, actually. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I think a few vodkas and you'd be dancing.
Oh,
it'd be crazy.
Fantastic live. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. If they're in town, go and see them. If you're brave enough to try and spell Shundurgo and do a search and try and buy or download the album, well, I'm sure they're great live.
Well, you know, there's what's called kolo dancers here, tunes. That's a Serbian circle dance. And there's a guy here who plays the frula, which is a wooden whistle. And it's actually their songs for dancing. So I beg to differ, really.
Oh, well, I've been known to get up and do a char dash at the drop of a hat. But not to this. You know, they're young guys and, yeah, this may be the very start of something huge.
I think they're great musicians, basically.
Well, thanks very much to both of you, David Hutchin and Jane Cornwell, for joining us here on World Roots.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
And as always, you can get full details of all the albums we're playing on World Roots on the BBC Radio 3 website. You're listening to BBC Radio 3. This is World Roots and I'm Lucy Duran. On the 4th of June, we lost one of the greatest female voices of Africa, Dimi Mint Abba. She was Mauritania's most famous singer and she was 52 years old. Dimi Mint Abba was a revered griot of the nomadic Hassaniya people. She specialised in the classical tradition known as haoul, a deep and passionate music reflecting very old sub-Saharan and Middle Eastern influences. But she was also a moderniser and one of a very few Mauritanian musicians with an international profile, thanks in part to a wonderful album released by World Circuit back in 1990. This is her song, Art's Plume. ¶¶ Art's Plume by the great Mauritanian singer Dimi Mint Abba, who died last month. Back to our session guest now, Mor Karbassi, born in Jerusalem, of Moroccan and Persian descent, and now living in the UK. She's joined in the studio by Joe Taylor on guitar, Davide Mantovani on bass, and Andres Ticino on percussion. And here they are with the song La Galana y la Mar.
Es posica estar en el baño, es posica estar en el baño, vestida de colorado, ya salió de la mar, vestida de colorado, ya salió de la mar. A la mar yo bien me echaba, a la mar yo bien me echaba, si la serena licencia me daba, ya salió de la mar. Si la serena licencia me daba, ya salió de la mar.
La Galana y la Mar, sung by Mor Karbassi, with musicians Joe Taylor on guitar, Davide Mantovani on bass, and Andres Ticino on percussion. So, Mor, that is a traditional Sephardic song, is it?
Yes.
Tell me about it.
It's a traditional Sephardic song from Greece, and traditionally it was probably sung to the young bride on the morning of her wedding, in the preparation, the combing of the hair, the dress. And the song was, in a way, explaining to the young bride what is expected from her as a married woman.
Well, tell me about your background more.
I grew up in Jerusalem, in Ramot. It's a big neighborhood in Jerusalem outside of the center. And I grew up listening to many kinds of music. My mother, she was always playing music in the house. She is actually comes from a Moroccan background. Both my grandparents from my mother's side come from Marrakesh in Morocco. And from my father's side, we are Iranian. And my mother was always playing Arabic music in the house. And we are a family that loves generally music, so I've always been exposed. And also Israel is a country that has many
different traditions.
Different traditions. So I think just being growing up there helped me a lot.
So, and how did you learn the Sephardi songs? Did you hear them? Did your mother sing them? Or
my mother was always singing to me since I was very little. But she was not singing for me Ladino. She was singing to me in Hebrew. And I came to it actually later in my life, looking for my roots, because ever since I was very little, I was always very attracted to things that has something to do with Spain. And I never knew why.
And how did you discover that actually you had Sephardi roots then?
Well, I asked my grandfather, my Moroccan grandfather, if he has any idea why I'm always loving it so much. And he said, well, actually, we come from Spain many generations ago. And he said to me, the blood never forgets. So wow. I took it seriously, I think. But it's my great love.
So that's on your mother's side, the yes. Sephardi, the Ladino language yes. and Sephardi tradition.
Yeah. Mm. Well, not the language. I came to it later, completely, because my family didn't keep the Sephardi tradition. So I came to it later in my life, studying it a lot, and also studying Piyutim, which is a Moroccan liturgical, it's religious Hebrew songs with Arabic melodies. And I studied that, and Ladino just comes very natural to me. When I hear a recording, usually it's field recordings, something inside me tells me immediately how to sing it. Something that doesn't happen
it's
to me with
blood.
Other genres of music. Yeah.
So it must be the blood.
It must be.
So the next piece of music that we're going to hear is called La Hija de la Primavera, which is the title track of your new album.
Yes.
Well, tell me, why don't you introduce the song?
La Hija de la Primavera in English means daughter of the spring. And the lyrics for the song were written by my mother. She wrote it in Hebrew. And then me and Jorge Bravo, who is another member of the band, translated it into Spanish. And I think my mother wrote it from my point of view, because she says the daughter of the spring doesn't live among us anymore, or from her point of view, actually, because I left home at a very young age. So this song talks about leaving home and looking for your own way. And in a way, the song says she has gone to look for silence. She's gone to look for her own path.
Well, let's hear La Hija de la Primavera by Mor Carbassi.
Let's do it.
La hija de la primavera.
Mor Carbassi with her musicians here in the World Roots studio with La Hija de la Primavera. That's completely different from the other two songs that we've heard you playing. You're really developing your skills as a songwriter, aren't you, Mor?
Yes. Well, I think it's very important. I mean, even though I can give old songs new life with my interpretation and my voice, I think it will always be something that I want to do, to write songs. It's something very creative, I think. And I think it's very important also to not make this music to a museum. I think it always needs to develop, and it's important to write more songs in the genre. And
so you see yourself, even though you're writing your own songs and the language is Spanish rather than Ladino, you still see yourself as sort of carrying on the Ladino or the Sephardi tradition?
Definitely, yes.
You work very closely with your musicians. Joe Taylor is your husband. He's the guitarist in the band. And the arrangements are a very important part of your music. And they're very interesting, more. They're not predictable, or, you know, they move between so many different sounds and styles. So tell me a little bit about the process of actually putting your music together.
Well, it started with me always singing. And music has always been my way to kind of step out of this world. But I met later in my life Joe Taylor in Sinai, in Egypt. And we started playing some songs together and continued into writing some material together, and started recording my first album, and he allowed my dream to come true, in a way. He did everything so that it will work out, so that what I wanted would happen. And for this, I will always be grateful for him. He's done an amazing job.
The last piece of music that you're going to play for us is called Rosa, and that has a very strong kind of oriental Arabic kind of sound, especially in its percussive... Well, in both its percussion and its scale, it's quite oriental.
It's one of the first songs I wrote, actually.
And the lyrics are really lovely. And also by your mother?
Yes, my mother.
Just summarize the lyrics, the meaning
of
the song.
Well, it's a song that's dedicated to women, really. And it talks about the beauty of women, how everyone sees them. But actually, no one really wants to know that there is also pain. You know, everyone just look from the outside and everyone come around you. You're so beautiful, Rosa. But no one wants to know that your petals are gathering tears and that you also have some thorns. So,
and so now we'll end with your song, Rosa.
llena dentro de sí lágrimas de lluvia, ma ellos no lo verán porque no quieren ver y saber que tiene.
Rosa, performed by Mor Carbassi here in the World Roots studio with Joe Taylor on guitar, Davide Mantovani on bass and Andres Ticino on percussion. Next week on World Roots, there's a special report by Andy Kershaw, no less, from the Siam Ring International Festival of Ethnic Music, which takes place every year in Siberia.
And you can hear Andy's report at the same time next Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock, here on BBC Radio 3. World Roots Today was presented by Lucy Duran and produced by Sam Hickling. An invitation now from Ian McMillan.
Tired and emotional. Under the influence. No, that doesn't describe me. After a few days of hard work in the Verb office, they're both titles of albums by the great Irish chanteuse Mary Coughlan, who was one of the guests on the Verb on July the 8th. Mary is a great interpreter of song, using her life's experiences to illuminate works by artists like Billie Holiday and Kirsty MacColl. Also on the show, we've got the exciting new wave storyteller Rachel Rose Reed, the award-winning poet Daljit Nagra with new work, and the novelist Joanne Harris with a look at the life and work of Mervyn Peake. And through it all, like a watermark through a 10-euro note chucked on a bar counter in Dublin, the voice of Mary Coughlan. Come and join us in the Radio Theatre at 7.15 on the 8th of July. Tickets are free from the BBC Tickets website or by ringing 0370 901 1227.
And that number again, 0370 901 1227. This is BBC Radio 3. It's 4 o'clock. Time now for Jazz Library with Alan Shipton.
This is the quintet led by British trumpeter Steve Fishwick and saxophonist Oshan Roberts in 2007. Their special guest is the subject of today's Jazz Library, the composer of this piece, Head & Shoulders, Cedar Walton. Head and Shoulders by the Osh and Roberts Steve Fishwick Quintet with Cedar Walton on Hard Bop Records. I met Cedar a few years back when he was in Britain and we talked about his recording career. We started by discussing his famous quartet, Eastern Rebellion, the group he formed as a counterblast to the West Coast Jazz School to show there was still inventive writing and playing coming out of the eastern seaboard of the USA. I wondered when he'd first brought the band to play at Ronnie Scott's in London.
Our first appearance there was in 1975, when we were a quartet that included the late Sam Jones on bass and George Coleman on sax, who comes back to the room on his own occasionally now. And I had a contract with RCA Records at the time, which had a big outpost, you might say, here in London, branch, you might say. And they were very cooperative and supportive. Namely, really huge photos of the personnel of the group in the foyer on the entrance. And I think Pete and them were quite impressed, you know.
Cedar Walton's composition Mode for Joe from his 1975 album Eastern Rebellion, now out on the Timeless label. The band, as he mentioned, was George Coleman on tenor, Sam Jones bass, Cedar himself on piano with Billy Higgins drums. When did his connection with the late Billy Higgins begin?
Association with Higgins goes back to the days that we used to play around town, around New York at that time. That would be the 60s, I believe, late 60s, early 70s. Many recordings on the Blue Note label, who had under contract the likes of Donald Byrd, Hank Mobley, Lee Morgan, Jackie McLean, Freddie Hubbard, people like that.
Lee Morgan's band from the 1966 Blue Note album Charisma. And it has almost the full cast of characters that Cedar Walton recalled as his musical running mates in the 60s. Lee Morgan on trumpet, Jackie McLean alto, Hank Mobley tenor and Billy Higgins drums. The bassist was Paul Chambers and the track was Sweet Honeybee. When I was first in New York in the 1980s, Cedar seemed to be playing in numerous bars. I'd hear him almost every week at places like The Cookery or Bradley's.
That's good, I think, for a jazz musician, an aspiring jazz musician who from between the age of 25 and 45. And then after that, if you have any measure of success at that routine, that popularity that you either get or you don't get around New York City, then you need to move on, at least I thought so anyway, too, because you want to be able to work at the major clubs and not so much the minor clubs or the major clubs with the see you playing at the minor clubs. They won't want to pay you the major club wage. It's sort of political, not that tasteful. I wouldn't go so far as to say distasteful, but boring kind of a way, you know. But it's something that comes quite natural to me. It doesn't come natural to everybody. Some people work all over town. They don't care and don't think about it like I know I put myself in the place of the proprietor of the club, the venue, if you will, and I know I wouldn't hire Cedar Walton at the Blue Note at considerably higher wage.
At a Blue Note wage?
Yeah, at a Blue Note wage, exactly. If I saw him playing at Bradley's the prior week, it just wouldn't make a good business sense.
Do you think that ability to have a lot of work in New York is something that is still as available now as it was at the time you were doing it?
I think so, yes. I would say so. Especially at the apprenticeship stage, yes, no question about it, yeah. There was a lull, though, but now I think it's back up to par. Now, there's places where young musicians can play, you know, until dawn.